Welcome to GemaraMarkings.com, your roadmap to the Talmud Bavli. We highly recommend printing out the PDF of the DAF with the markings, or better yet, emailing us to obtain your own copy of the Shas Ozer pre-marked Gemara edition. If this is your first time visiting the site, we highly recommend clicking on the links to view the sample markings, as well as to hear a brief 4-minute audio explanation of the Shas Ozer pre-marked Gemara edition. Enjoy your shiur.
Today's shiur in Maseches Bava Basra will be beginning from the bottom of Daf Kuf Chof Zayin Omid Beis. Before we begin the Gemara text itself, we're going to bask in the joy of the marvelous marking system that lies in front of us. We notice at the point that the shiur will begin, two lines from the bottom, a diamond form. Let's glance at the outside margin, where we see a diamond form and the double underline series markings featured, and appreciate what lies ahead. We see there a Mivne note, and next to it, an indication that this goes to Kuf Chof Ches Omid Beis. That means by taking note of the geometric form, you realize that we're going to be involved in a series that lasts till Kuf Chof Ches Omid Beis, a whole Daf Gemara that has a theme that runs through. The diamonds will encompass the expression Sholach Lei, and the double underline Rabbi Abba L'Rav Yosef Bar Chama, namely that Rabbi Abba sends a question to Rav Yosef Bar Abba, but how many? So let's scan ahead. We notice this is number one, and following the space, following in the space between the Gemara and that which is next to it, namely to the left-hand side of the Gemara text, you see here a one in the diamond, continuing down Kuf Chof Ches Amud Aleph for those who are using their computer screen. So you'll have to scroll ahead, and you see a 2, 3, and 4. And if you scroll ahead till Kuf Chof Ches Amud Beis, you'll notice at the very top a 5, and there follows that a 6 and 7. In other words, 7 issues that are questions that Rabbi Abba sends to Rabbi Yosef. The Gemara at the end of Kuf Ches Omid Beis will tell us, 4 lines from the bottom, notice we've dashed, underlined the expression Hilchasa, where Mar Zutra tells us, Hilchasa b'chol ha'nishmaitzel k'dishalach lei Rabbi Abba l'Rav Yosef bar Chama, which in effect means that the Gemara is paskining, is ruling, like all of these cases, like the answers that Rabbi Abba was provided with. There'll be some technical discussion over there, but you've got a feeling of what lays ahead. With that having been said, let us turn to the Gemara itself. Sholach lei Rabbi Abba l'Rabbi Yosef bar Chama, ho'imer l'chavero, avdi gonavto. Person claims from his fellow man, you stole my slave. Vu omer, lo gonavti. The other fellow responds, I didn't steal. The first fellow says back, ma tivo etzlecha, so what's the nature of my slave being in your possession? So the fellow responds, Ato mocharto li, or Ato nosato li v'matana. You sold him to me, or you gave him to me as a gift. Ritzoncha hishove v'tol. If you like, you may swear. And to back up your position, namely your claim that I owe him to you, your claim that I stole him from you, by all means, if you like, swear and take him back. Vinishba, the protester, the claimer, went ahead and swore. Eino yochol lachzer boi. The fellow who was holding the slave cannot back out. He can't say, hey, I wasn't serious about my offer for you to swear and take it. There's quite a bit of detail that accompanies this particular case. On the surface, it looks like a very simple discussion between two people, one claiming, the other one responding, an offer made to swear to back up his position, the position of the claimer, and the conclusion of the Gemara that once the oath is made, the other party cannot back out. The Gemara is going to ask, what is significant about Rabbi Abba's teaching when it's already featured in a Tanaic source? We see a Tanaic source in front of us, and we've featured with a dashed underline toward the end of the source, it says, V'chachomim omrim eino yochol lachzer bo. On the second line from the top, we featured a dashed underline. All, same thing, eino yochol lachzer bo. That expression, eino yochol lachzer bo, that you can't back out, is already taught in a Tanaic source which precedes Rabbi Abba. So the question the Gemara is raising is, what do I need Rabbi Abba for? However, we have to offer in our explanation a little bit more by way of detail. First of all, the concept of taking a shvua min haTorah, midoraisa, is what's called a shvua liftor. A person swears, and the result of the swearing is he swears to back up his innocence. The standard case that's featured to illustrate a shvua deraisa is where someone claims, A claims from B, you owe me $100. B says back, I don't owe you $100, I owe you only 50, because 50 I've paid up already. That's called moda b'miksas. And min haTorah, moda b'miksas, has to swear. What is the nature of his oath? What's he swearing? He's swearing that I don't owe you the other 50. 50 I owe you, and I'll have to pay that. The oath doesn't concern that. That's obvious. He's confessed. He's admitted that he owes 50. The other 50, though, that he is denying, so the Torah expects him to swear. As a result of that, he swears, and he's potter. That's called a shvua liftor. However, from the Torah standpoint, there is no such thing as swearing and then taking. In our case, though, we saw the fellow who was being claimed from offering, making an offer, if you who are claiming from me are really serious about your claim, I'll be happy to offer you the opportunity to swear and take it. Swear that I owe you this eved, and if you swear, so I will give him to you. That's called a shvua litol, a shvua in order to take. Now that we've introduced that idea, we can appreciate a little bit more the chidush of the Gemara in that after the offer is made and the claimer swears, the result that Rabbi Abba teaches us is eino yochol lachzer bo. He can't back out anymore. In other words, an offer was made of something that by basic law doesn't take place. The idea of a shvua litol doesn't exist by basic Torah law. However, if you make the offer, then we will treat the offer seriously. And if the Ma'arir swears, then the machzik, the one holding on to the eved, must part with him. Upon that, the Gemara raises a question, as we saw before, from a Tanaic source. We didn't learn the full question inside, but the Tanaic source comes from Masechet Sanhedrin. In that Masechet, the Gemara deals with people who are kosher, who are acceptable to serve as judges. There are people that are unacceptable to serve as judges. However, if two parties have a case and one offers the other, you know what? He says, I'll accept the ruling of three roe bokar. Roe bokar is an example of cowhands, cowboys, if you will. They are people that are assumed to be ignorant of halacha, ignorant of law. And as such, they wouldn't qualify as acceptable judges. However, if for some reason people in a dispute will agree upon having them serve as judges, then whatever they rule, according to the Chachomim, in the source that we will be learning shortly, according to the Chachomim, Eino Yochol Afserbo. So once an offer is made of something that's not applicable by letter of the law, in other words, these judges are not official judges, they're not sanctioned judges by Shulchan Aruch. However, if you make the offer to accept their ruling, that's parallel to our case of making the offer of an oath that isn't part of the Iker Hadin, isn't part of the essential halacha. But once the offer is made, you can't back out. You agreed upon it. Other examples of posel, people that are posel for judgment, are close relatives. One's father cannot serve as a dayan for his son's case. However, if the parties, the disputing parties, agree, so if he serves as a dayan and issues a ruling, according to the Chachamim, Eino Yochol Afserbo. Let us now see the question inside, starting from the second line from the top. Notice in the space between the Gemara and the Tosfos, namely to the left-hand side of the Gemara text, a kuf that's encircled with a dashed vertical line, that indicates that all of these lines are needed to develop the question. Mai komash malon, what is Rabbi Abba telling us? Tanina, we know this already from a source. Omar loi, ne'mon olai Abba, ne'mon olai Avicha. Parties in a dispute, one says to the other, I'll accept what your father rules, or I'll accept what my father rules, or Ne'moni molai shlosha roye bokar, I'll accept the ruling of three cowboys. Rabbi Meir Omer, Yochol Lachzerbo. Rabbi Meir is of the opinion that they can back out. However, V'chachomim Omerim, Eino Yochol Lachzerbo. Once this unofficial type judge was accepted, no backing out. So the Gemara answers, Ho komash malon. What Rabbi Abba reveals to us is that even in a case of debe'etein loch machlokes v'halocha kedivrei chachamim, the Gemara here is very terse, but let it be known that in Masechet Sanhedrin, it's presented as a much more elaborate sukya. Etein loch means, I will give you. There are two situations where these type of judges might rule. One situation would be a ruling that says, he's potter from paying. Doesn't have to pay. Another type of ruling is that I will give you. To suggest that their ruling will be accepted even as far as I will give you, and I can't back out from that, that is considered a bigger chiddush than a ruling where the result would be so-and-so doesn't have to pay. Because in a case of saying mochuloch, where the claimer says, if they rule in your favor, keep the money where it is. Keep the item where it is. That's called maintaining a current status. So one could imagine that in maintaining a current status, that is an easier thing to accomplish. Easier than someone who accepts upon himself that if they rule that I have to pay, I will pay. That is changing an existing status, meaning up till now I was holding on to the item. As a result of their ruling, I will give you the item. I will transfer its current status, namely transfer it from me to you. If we say that even in that case, their acceptance of unofficial judges and their ruling is binding, that serves as a bigger chiddush, and that's what the case that we had over here was. The case of Rabbi Abba was, if you swear that I owe you the slave, I will give him to you. In other words, I will change his current status. His current status is in my possession, and I will give him to you. So as far as we're concerned, that constitutes a big chiddush that we were looking for. That from the Mishnah in Sanhedrin itself, I don't see that. All I see is that if you accept the ruling of that, or he who is unofficial, you can't back out, I might have assumed that's only in a case where their ruling maintains a current status. But where acceptance of that which is unofficial and tell me it's binding, even in a case where I change a status, that too is binding, that's considered a bigger chiddush, a more novel idea. Let us continue to number two. Shalach le Rabbi Abba the Rav Yosef Bar Chama. Number two, before we go further, we should look in the margin of our Gemara. Even though we learned case one, nevertheless, we have a no-say heading that we can use currently as a point of review. In the marked Gemaras, the topic feature on the outside margins has a dual purpose. It can serve to introduce a sugya, and can also serve as a quick review of the sugya. So let us look at that outside margin. And we see a diamond number one. Nitba shematzia lema'arer hatovea mimenu lishava velito. We have someone who's being claimed from, who proposes to the claimer, if you like, you can swear, and as a result of that, take from me. Afalpi shehanitba ne'emon betanoisov me'ikir hadin. This is a point we didn't mention in our explanation of the Gemara, but we've noted it here. Even though the person being claimed from had believability in his claim, he would have won the case if you're looking at it from the letter of the law standpoint. Nevertheless, he who is being claimed from, who would have won, makes an offer. If you swear, I will give him to you. V'nishbaha ma'arer, and our note continues, and the claimer swears, ein ha'nitba yochol achzerbo. The fellow being claimed from cannot back out, and he will have to part with the slave. Number two, that's the next case. Machloikes I goyven me'avodim k'moshu goyven mikarkois. One who has been exposed to many sugyas in the Shas knows that loans, especially milva bishtar, person owes money and the loan was recorded in a document, the lender has a right to claim land from the borrower in the event that the borrower doesn't have cash to pay up the loan. That's called gviya mikarka, collecting from land. What happens if a person doesn't have cash, but he has slaves? Can you collect from his slaves? Truth be told, there are several areas of halacha based on the gzeirus hakosuv, based on learning a certain way of learning sukkim, that the Torah reveals that slaves are compared legally to land. The question is, how far does that comparison go? The Rashbam tells us that there are certain things that are given. That Eved Hukish Lekarka, an Eved is compared to land, certainly as far as method of acquiring. In other words, the same kinyonim that one practices by land will work on acquiring a slave. A second point, and all of this is found in the Rashbam, the second point is that just like one doesn't swear, make oaths concerning land, one does not, from a Torah standpoint, swear concerning slaves. And a third point is that the issue of overpricing, what's called ona, just like it doesn't apply to land transactions, it similarly doesn't apply to sales of slaves. However, the question that we're dealing with is a question of gevia, collection. A lender is trying to collect his debt from the borrower's slaves. Let's now look in the Gemara. The diamond number two, Sholach le Rabbi Abba le Rabbi Yosef bar Chama halocha, goivin min ha'avodim. That a lender of money can collect from the yesaimim of the loive. In other words, we had someone that borrowed money and he passed away before paying up his debt. Rabbi Abba is telling us that the lender can seize the borrower's slaves. Even though there's a well-known halacha that metaltili diasmi lo mishabdi, portables that are inherited by heirs are not bound to cover their father's debts. Avodim, slaves, are not considered portables in this particular halacha. They're considered having a legal status of land. And hence, the lender can collect from the yesomim, the avodim they inherited from their father. Rav Nachman Omar Ein Goivin. Rav Nachman disagrees with Rabbi Abba and says that as far as collection is concerned, collection of debts, even though in other areas of halacha slaves are considered landed property, not with regard to chov. They're considered metatlin. This particular diamond, number two, we're going to have to bear in mind when we get to Amud Beis. We have an arrow that we're not going to use right now, but we're mentioning ahead of time that we're going to have to come back to this particular point. Before we go on in the Gemara, let's glance at the outside margin. We see a diamond number three. Mi yochol lohaid. Who is acceptable as witnesses? Be'inyin kroivim. Shem maspik rechokim. When dealing with relatives, one might well assume that a very close relative cannot testify in court on behalf of his relative. In other words, a son would not be acceptable to testify on behalf of his father, or a brother would not be acceptable to testify for his brother. How about third cousins? Would they be able to testify? Before we go into the Gemara text itself, we've provided a little scheme that's found on the lower part on the inside margin. It's positioned here opposite the appropriate lines of the Rashbam. Let us just describe what we see over there. We see two columns, one and underneath that two, and underneath that three. These represent generations. The ones that are opposite each other, the top of each column, represent brothers. So we can say that a one cannot testify on behalf of a one. Because what we're saying is a brother cannot testify on behalf of his brother. The number twos, when you look at them opposite each other, we could regard them as first cousins. The sons of brothers are first cousins. They're considered, in the terminology we'll be using, a two for a two. We're not saying that they can testify, but as far as reading this little scheme, that's how we would present it. And if we go further down, we see what we would call second cousins. A three testifying for a three. Is that acceptable? When one analyzes the relationship between the two parties from the opposite columns, one should realize that a three is related to a three by virtue of going up a few generations and then coming back down. In other words, three can say, well, the three on the other side of the column he's related to me because, well, I had a grandfather. My grandfather had a brother. And my grandfather's brother had this particular grandson. The way I like to look at it is you have to go up and then down. You go up one column and then down the next. Therefore, we can say that the three to the three are very distantly related, because in order to get to the relationship, I had to travel quite a distance. One should not be mistaken by saying, hey, they're just opposite each other and they're on the chart, and hence they're close to one another. That's not the case. One has to see and analyze how they are related, as we just did. Furthermore, we're going to talk about the ability of a three to testify for a one. The three testifying for a one, when we present the Gemara initially, will not be a case of grandchild testifying for grandfather, even though there is a shita in the Gemara that will be presented and rejected that talks about grandson testifying for grandfather. But initially, we're not going to entertain that idea. But rather, when we talk about a three testifying for a one, what we really are talking about is a three from one column testifying for the one in another column. Can someone's grandson testify for grandfather's brother? And likewise, when we talk about a three for a two, we're not going to be talking about a three testifying for the two that's above him. That would in effect be a son testifying for his father. But rather, we're going to be talking about a three from one column testifying for a two in the other column. That having been said, we can also see that a three to a one is closer in relationship than a three to a two. We now turn to the Gemara. Shalach le Rabbi Abba Rav Yosef Bar Chama. Halacha, shlishi, besheni, kosher. A shlishi can testify for a sheni. Rava Omar, af berishon. Rava extends Rabbi Abba's teaching and says you can have even someone who's a bit closer testifying, namely a three testifying for a one. Mor Baravashi Achshir Ba'abo De'abo. Mor Baravashi wants to say that a grandson can testify for his grandfather. V'les Hilchoso Kemor Baravashi. The Gemara immediately rejects that, though. Number four. What do we have in our outside margin? Yoda Edus Bi'oid Shoya Kosher Lo'id V'acharkach Nifsal. This describes a situation where someone knew testimony when he was in a state of being acceptable as a witness, but before he actually testified, he became unacceptable. In other words, at the point of witnessing the event, he was kosher as a witness, but at the point of making a court appearance, he already became unacceptable. The Gemara will share with us different examples as we go along in the sugya. Sholach lei Rebbe Abba the Rav Yosef Bar Chama. Hoyo yodea lo edus karka ad shelo nistama. Person knew information, testimony concerning some land while he was still sighted. Finistama. And then he lost his eyesight. Puzzle. He is not acceptable. He cannot testify in court. A second opinion, Ushmul Omar Kosher. He can testify. Efshur de Mechavein Metzarnaha. He can testify regarding the borders. Even though he can't, because he's lost his sight, he can't go to the field and say the field ends over here. He can't see. However, he can describe the borders. He can describe items that are on the borders of the field in question and say that the field in question is bordered by a red house, a tall pine tree, a white picket fence, and offer that information, thereby defining where the field is. Aval glimo lo, but to testify concerning an article of clothing, he cannot say that. He can't testify about that. When he was sighted, he could have said, I recognize this coat to be so-and-so's. In his current state of blindness, he can't say that. He can't see it. What might he say? He might say, so-and-so has a coat size 44. That's not convincing, though, because there are many coats that are size 44. Rav Sheshes Omar Afilu Glima. He can testify about an article of clothing, even though he's currently unsighted. Efshur de Mechave Midas Orko U Midas Rochbo. He could tell us the length of the item and the width of the item. He can describe its measurements. Avol Nasko Lo. But Nasko is a bar of silver. Bar of metal. He can't testify about that. V'Rav Papa Omar Afilu Nasko. This person who had seen the bar of metal in question and now at the point of testimony lost his sight, he can testify about it. He can say, it says Efshur de Mechave Midas Mishkaloisov. He can tell us that the bar of metal in question, the bar of metal that's owed to so-and-so, has a weight of 35 grams. That's Efshur de Mechave Midas Mishkalosov. He can tell us the weight of the item, and that would be sufficient to identify it as being owned by so-and-so. Up till now, we saw a number of examples. We opened up with Rabbi Abba in this list of names. He was the first opinion. We have a number one near the diamond four,
Why do we have a one next to him? Because we saw subsequent opinions in the matter of someone who knew testimony when he was still kosher and then became unacceptable. Namely, he lost his sight. We also dashed, underlined the expression toward the beginning of this section, Nistam Apostle. And after that, after we saw Shmuel, and we dashed, underlined the expression kosher. Shitas Rabbi Abba, therefore, we can say, is that if at the point of testimony the witness became unacceptable, he's just unacceptable. We're not going to listen to what he has to say. Shmuel and company, Shmuel, Rav Sheshes, Rav Popa, all of these Rabbonim agree, unlike Rabbi Abba, that there is a possibility of a person who's currently Nistamo, currently unsighted, and yet able to testify. The Gemara now has a long question, Meisvei. Notice this question is a long question, as is indicated by the kuf in the space between the Gemara and the Rashbam, namely to the right hand side of the Gemara text itself. You notice an encircled kuf with a long vertical dash line going to the top of Amud Beis. At the top of Amud Beis, the Gemara says, Tiufta de Kulhu, that this source serves to refute all of them. But one has to be careful when he says all of them, who is included in the all of them. In the marked Gemaras, we've offered a service of reduce guesswork by including the names. Who is the Kulhu? And of course the Rashbam does the same thing, so don't feel that you're losing out on anything. The Kulhu are Shmuel, Rav Sheshes, and Rav Popa. Why is that? Why is this source a refutation of them? Because in this source, which we haven't learned yet, we're going to notice that a person who at the point of testimony is puzzle, even though he witnessed it when he was still kosher, is nevertheless unacceptable. The only opinion that would agree with that was that of Rabbi Abba. The other opinions don't conform to what's taught in the source, and the source having greater legal weight because of the fact that it's a Tanaic source, serves to counter the opinions of those who said he was kosher. Before we begin the source, we notice in the source some geometric forms. We notice a triangle form, appears twice. It opens up with Hoyo Yodea, and in the middle of the source, we have a squiggle and avol, and then again the triangle Hoyo Yodea, because the two sections of the source will be dealing with two different cases, and the expression avol is squiggle underline because the squiggle underline marking is used often to denote a change. So let's begin the Tanaic source and take note of the key expressions that serve to present the question, particularly those terms that are dashed, underlined. Meisvei, hoyo yodea lo bi'edus ad sheloi nase chasonoi, v'nase chasono. A person knew testimony before he married so-and-so's daughter, namely before he became so-and-so's son-in-law. Someone saw an event, someone saw a loan take place from a total stranger. But before he came to court, he happened to marry that stranger's daughter, becoming that individual's son-in-law. Another example, Pikeach v'nischaresh. A person had been party to an event while he was healthy and then lost his hearing. Piteach v'nistama, someone who was sighted and then lost his sight. What we've done with our markings, we've dashed, underlined v'nistama because this is the example that Rabbi Abba and company used. Hence, we want to feature it in our markings here. Here's a case of someone who lost his sight. Shofui v'nishtate, someone who was normal, sane, and became insane. Puzzle. And again, we've dashed, underlined that. What the object of this marking is to combine nistama posel. Compare that to the dashed underlines above. We saw nistama posel dashed underline under Rabbi Abba. But when you turn to Shmuel, for example, we saw kosher. That doesn't conform to what this source is teaching. Let's continue. Avol. Hoyo yodea loy beedus ad shloi naase chasonoi. Venaase chasonoi. Umeisa bito. Here's a case of witnessing the event while unrelated. In the interim, became related, but before the court appearance, the relative died, thereby making this witness unrelated. And similarly with these other examples, the other health-related examples, pikeach, v'nischarish, v'chozer, v'nispakeach. He saw the testimony when he was healthy, in the interim lost his hearing, and before the court appearance, regained his hearing. And similarly, piteach, v'nistamo, v'chozer, v'nispateach. Shofui v'nishtate, v'chozer, v'nishtafo. Kosher. All of these examples, from the second triangle on, he is suitable to testify. Ze haklal. Kol shetchilosoi oi soifo b'paslus, posel. The rule that comes out of this is that if at the beginning or at the end, namely at the event or at the point of testimony in court, there is something lacking, there's a psul, then posel. However, tchilos of esofo bekashrus, kosher. That was the second half of the source, but for our purposes, we're focusing on the first section of the source and Roman numeral 1 in this rule. Namely, that if besofo there's psul, even though at the time of witnessing the event there was kashrus, there was acceptability, nevertheless, if at the point of testimony is posel, not acceptable. Tiufto de kulhu. This appears to be against the opinions of Shmuel, Rav Sheshes, and Rav Papa that enabled the currently unsighted person to testify about those different respective cases. Is this to be therefore understood as a refutation? Tiufta, yes. This is a refutation. Let us glance in the outside margin. Benose, heading number 5. Deois b'ne'emonus ho'av al bonov. Different opinions regarding the believability of a father regarding his children. We're not talking here about standard testimony. What are we talking about? We'll have to wait and let the Gemara explain itself. We've also featured with a circle the opinions of Abaye, how Abaye understands Rabbi Yochanan's comment, and how Rava does. The Mivneh heading in the outside margin indicates Abaye v'Rava Masbirim de Oiseim shel Rabbi Abba v'Rabbi Yochanan. They, the later scholars, Abaye and Rava, will be offering their explanations as to the opinions of the earlier scholars, Rabbi Abba and Rabbi Yochanan. The Gemara continues. Shalach Rabbi Abba or Rabbi Yosef Barchamo. Ha'imer al tinoik bein habonim ne'emon. This phrase has very little understanding. We've indicated in our write-in between the lines, l'kamon meforesh, means stay tuned, it will be explained. Rabbi Yochanan Omar eino ne'emon. Whereas Rabbi Abba said, he is believed, Rabbi Yochanan says he's not. Gemara asks, my ko'omar, what are we talking about? Omar Abaye, hochi ko'omar. Ha'oimer al tinoik vein habonim. If a person says regarding a child amongst other children, a father identifies, labels one child amongst his other children, and he says, Yirash kol nechosai. I want this one to inherit all of my property. Ne'emon. Literally translated, He's believed. The ability to label one son amongst other sons and say that it's valid, that is Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. That would conform to the opinion of the Tana, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, in the Mishnah, that said if a person says concerning someone who is an heir that he is to receive all of the property, that is valid. Rabbi Yochanan Omar Eino Ne'emon. Kirabonan. And Rabbi Yochanan disagreeing with Rabbi Abba accepts a position that conforms to the opinion of the Rabbonan who disagreed with Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. Maskif lo Rava. Rava attacks this explanation of Abaye and says, I don't understand the use of the word ne'emon or eino ne'emon as far as the example that you are giving. Maskif lo Rava. Hai ne'emon vi eino ne'emon? Yirash velo yirash mi boyale. It would have been more appropriate for Rabbi Abba and Rabbi Yochanan to have used the expression inherit or not inherit rather than the expression that they did use of believed or not believed. Namely, according to Abaye's interpretation of Rabbi Abba and Rabbi Yochanan, what was the case? There was a father labeling one child to receive all of the inheritance. What would be the appropriate verb form to use? After saying, I want this child, this son, as opposed to the other sons to inherit, if you hold like Rabbi Yochanan Baroka, so you would say, Yirash, he inherits. Where does the issue of believability come in? Elo Omar Rava. Rava, therefore, offers his interpretation to what Rabbi Abba and Rabbi Yochanan were talking about. Because, after all, they used the expression ne'emon, believed. There must have been some kind of issue, some kind of cloudy matter that needed clarification, and based on his word, we will say that he's believed in this clarification. So let's see what the case is. Hachi ko Omar, ha'omer al tinok bein habonim, b'chor hu, Ne'emon, Rabbi Yehuda. If a father says regarding one child amongst his other children and says that this one is the firstborn, and he's saying that in the context of a chazakah where one of the other children was considered the firstborn, father comes along and says, no, it's not like what the public thinks. It's not like the chazakah, but rather this child is the firstborn. So, according to Rabbi Abba, Ne'emon, the father is believed based on the Tanaic opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, who said, and this we have learned in a previous Gemara, that a father is believed against the chazakah. This was featured in a Tanaic source on Kuf Chof Zayin Omid Beis. Continuing in the Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Eino Ne'emon. The father is not believed, since there is an accepted status that one of the other sons is the Bechor, the father is not believed. Kirabonan, based on the opinion of the Rabbonan, that was also featured there on Kuf Chof Zayin Amud Beis. Number 6. Let's glance at the topic heading in the outside margin. Ha'omer titol ishti ke'echod min habonim. Someone says that he wants his wife to receive a portion in his estate like one of his sons. Generally speaking, a wife, as we've learned already at the beginning of this perek, a wife is not in the line of inheritance to inherit from her husband. The Torah law makes numerous provisions for a woman's welfare when her husband passes away. Those provisions are contained in the ksuba that she receives. But as far as inheritance is concerned, the woman is not in the standard line of inheritance. However, if a man wants to offer his wife a portion of his estate, that's a different story, and that very much depends on how he phrases it, what language he chooses in order for that to take place. So the Gemara says inside, Shalach le Rabbi Abba le Rabbi Yosef Bar Chama, Ha'imer, Titoil Ishti Ke'echod Min Habonim. I want my wife to receive a portion in my estate like one of my sons. Noiteles Ke'echod Min Habonim. She will receive a portion like one of the other children, one of the other sons. This is now qualified by Rava, 2 points of qualification. Omar Rava, ubenechosim shel achshav. The portion that the wife receives is based on current property, property that he is currently in possession of. In other words, if this man, this husband, acquires property at a later date, that latter property will not be divided with the wife, with the widow, when the time comes. A second qualification, ubebonim haboin li'achar mikan. However, if this man produces sons later, after he makes this offer to his wife, more children are born, the division with the wife must take into consideration the children that he has at the point of his demise. Number 7. Let us glance at the outside margin. Hamotzi shtar choy val chavero. Someone pulls out a debt in a document, a bill of debt. You owe me money. Malve oimer lo nifrati. The lender claims, I have not been paid. Klum, I've been paid nothing. Loive oimer nifrati mechza. Says, I received half. I paid half. Porati mechza. I paid half. Generally speaking, that's called moide b'miktsas. The edim me'idim l'toivas haloive shepora kulo. And witnesses show up afterwards, after the loive claimed he paid half, witnesses come and testify he paid up the entire debt. Now, we turn to the Gemara. Sholach le Rabbi Abba le Rabbi Yosef Bar Chama, Hamotzi shtar chov achavero. Malve oimer loy nifrati klum. I received nothing. The loyve omer parati mechza. The borrower claims I paid half. Veho edim meidim shepora kulo. And witnesses say the borrower paid up everything. The Gemara goes on with what might be a surprise to some of you. Hare ze nishva, the loive swears, which is in effect standard procedure with regard to moide b'miktsas. He confessed still owing half. We mentioned that in today's shiur earlier. Vegoive mechza minechosim b'nei chorin avol mimeshubodim loy. The lender, the malve, is entitled to collect half, in other words, the half that the borrower claimed he still owed. He, the lender, the malve, can collect that half from property that is in the possession of the borrower, but not from mishubodim, not from property that the lender sold subsequent to the loan. Why is it? Why is it that the malva, the lender, cannot turn to those purchasers who purchased after the loan was extended? The amri, the purchasers, can say, Anan, we who bought the land from that borrower, A'edim Samchinon, we were relying on witnesses who knew that the entire loan was paid up. So as far as we're concerned, we bought land from someone that had no liens against him, because we were relying on the fact that witnesses saw him pay up the entire loan. The Gemara continues, in effect, Rabbi Abba continues, and says, V'afilu l'Rabbi Akiva, the Omar, meshiv aveda have. Unfortunately, we have a situation where the Gemara is presenting an entire sugya in a very terse fashion. This is a reference to the Gemara at the beginning of Maseches Bava Metzia. The Gemara there presents a case where a shtar is pulled out and a malva claims from a lova, you owe me money. Unfortunately, in the shtar, the exact amount is not recorded. All that it says in the shtar is that B owes A sloim, sloim being a type of coinage. B owes A dollars, how many? So in the case that's presented in the Gemara, the claimer, the lender, claims you owe me five. The borrower says, I owe you only three. What's recorded in the shtar? That a loan was extended of sloim in the plural. The minimum plural happens to be two. We have a case where the borrower is kind enough, if you will, to say, I owe you more than that which is officially recorded in the shtar. When I say officially recorded, we mention that the term appears in the plural. The minimum plural being two, he, the borrower, is saying, I owe you three. According to Rabbi Akiva in Bava Metzia, he, the borrower, is considered a meshiv aveda. He's considered someone who is restoring a lost item. And there's a takona that a meshiv aveda doesn't have to swear. If people, when returning lost items, were expected to swear that this is all they found, people would hesitate performing that mitzvah. So the halacha recognizes the exemption of meshiv avedos, people who are doing the mitzvah of hashavas aveda, from being exempt from swearing. Likewise, in the case over there where a person concedes, I owe you three, when he could have gotten away by saying, I owe you two, and that's what it says in the shtar, in effect, and he offers to pay even more, that Rabbi Akiva in Bava Metzia claims is a meshiv aveda. He's a nice guy. The chiddush, before we go on to the chiddush, let me point out, there is an opposing opinion to Rabbi Akiva in Maseches Bava Metzia. He is Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says that when a person claims, after being charged five, responds, I owe you only three, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar calls him a moide b'miktsas, and as such, he has to swear. So there's a machlokes tanoim, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Rabbi Akiva is saying that the one who concedes I owe you three, not five, he doesn't have to swear, he's a meshiv aveda. And Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar disagrees and says he's considered a motive and makes someone who concedes partial. How does all that apply to our case here? So let's go on in the Gemara. In our case, the borrower said, I owe you half. Rabbi Abba ruled that the malve, after the lova swears, in other words, the lova is expected to swear, he's viewed as a mode b'miktsas, the malve, the lender, will then collect from the possessions of the borrower. This halacha goes as so far as to say, V'afilu l'Rabbi Akiva, says Rabbi Abba, even according to Rabbi Akiva. The Omar Meshiv Aveda Havei, that in the case in Bava Metzia, the fellow who conceded, the lender, the borrower who conceded, I owe you three. In other words, he conceded that I owe you more than he would have to pay by letter of the law. And as a result of that, over there, he doesn't have to swear. Hani mili hecha deleko edim. That's true when there are no witnesses on the scene. Namely, his concession that I owe you three is out of pure motivation, pure intention, pure positive intention. However, where there are witnesses, like in our case, where witnesses existed, they simply showed up on the scene after the borrower made his claim, made his comment. At the time the borrower spoke, our Gemara claims the borrower didn't know how those witnesses would testify. In fact, in his mind, he was fear-struck. Those witnesses might testify, I owe the entire amount. So the Gemara says, Avohecho deiko edim, like in our case, irtusi irtas, the confession of the borrower that I owe you half is not considered a meshiv aveda. Even though at the end of the day, when he says, I owe you half, and witnesses say he really owes nothing, he sounds like a nice guy, and we might have thought to categorize him as a meshiv aveda, and thereby exempting him from the need to swear. Nevertheless, at the time that he spoke, he did not know how those witnesses would testify. And hence, we cannot say that his confession of I owe you half is coming from the same source of motivation as a standard meshiv aveda. Maskif lo mor baravashi. Adarabba, mor baravashi takes a totally opposite approach. He says, afilu l'Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, even according to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, who argued with Rabbi Akiva in the case of the shtar with the plural coins written in without the exact amount, who said, di omar moide miktsas ataina have, when the borrower claimed, I owe you three, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar views him as a moide b'miktsas, and as a result of that, by letter of the law, must swear. Hani mili hecho deleko edim dekom esayale. That is where there are no witnesses supporting his claim. Avol hecho deiko edim dekom esayale. However, in a case like our case, where witnesses are helping the borrower, vadai meshiv aveda have. He is certainly considered a meshiv aveda, and as a result of that, he would not have to swear. So at this point in the Gemara, we see Rabbi Abba holding that the Love, who said Parati Mechza, has to swear, and eventually has to pay up from his Bnei Chorin. Mar Bravashi disagrees with that. At this point, the Gemara proceeds to rule on all of these cases. Dorash Marzutra Mishmei Durav Simi Bar Ashi. Hilchasa v'chol ha'nishmaitza k'desholach lei Rabbi Abba l'Rav Yosef Bar Chama. The ruling is to follow that which Rabbi Abba sent to Rav Yosef Bar Chama. Omer lei Ravina l'Rav Ashi. Are you telling me that we're going to follow his ruling in all of the cases? The Rav Nachman Mai, what about the case involving Rav Nachman? That was an issue of collecting a debt from Avodim. Can a lender turn to the Yesoimim of the borrower and collect the slaves? The reason the Gemara raises this as a question, we saw what Rabbi Abba said. We saw over there, and we can use the arrows that we've provided to find the case. We have an arrow here in the space between the Gemara and the Tosfos, indicating Omed Aleph. That means survey Omed Aleph on the same side as of the Gemara text, and find an arrow indicating Omed Beis. And lo and behold, you find in the upper part of the page, Govin minu avodim, and Rav Nachman said ain't govin. The Gemara there presented Rabbi Abba as holding you're able to collect from the avodim. Why are we asking this question now? The reason is because Rav Nachman's opinion of ain't govin me avodim is a well-known accepted ruling. And that being the case, Rav Nachman who said ain't govin, how is it that you can tell me over here that we're going to follow all of the teachings of Rabbi Abba, when in the case of the Avodim, he says, Goivin. The Gemara answers, Omar Lei, Ein Goivin Masninan La, V'chein Omar Rav Nachman. When teaching over Rabbi Abba's Halacha, the correct teaching should have been, Ein Goivin Min Hu Avodim. In other words, teach the text of Rabbi Abba as it is over here, Ein Goivin. That's why we have it in quotation marks. And if you present Rabbi Abba like that, you then would go on to say, and thusly ruled Rav Nachman that we don't collect from slaves. If that be the case, that we rule like Rabbi Abba in all of these cases, and that you're telling me now that Rabbi Rav Nachman agrees with Rabbi Abba, why was the use of the word hilchasa taught here? The Gemara asks and starts a long question, which goes to the top of Kuf Choftes Amud Aleph. The Gemara asks, "Vela hilchasa laafuke mai?" By using the term hilchasa, we're saying we are ruling like him, and there is implied the idea like him and not like someone else. But if Rabbi Abba is presented as being an opinion that is not subject of controversy, it seems from what we just said, namely that Rav Nachman agrees with him, so why does Mar Zutra, a few lines up, say Hilchasa is like Rabbi Abba, who disagrees with him? And that's what the Gemara is asking now. If the intention of using the term Hilchasa is to exclude Rava's teaching, well, we have to find out what was Rava talking about. The Rashbam clues us in onto that. Rava was dealing with the case of who can testify for whom. We saw in the presentation of who can testify for whom, in Rabbi Abba number 3, in other words, diamond number 3, Rabbi Abba said a 3 can testify for a 2. Rava said a 3 can testify even for a 1. So if you think that the ruling like Rabbi Abba is to exclude Rava, that's not correct. Moisiv who? Rava is simply coming to add on to Rabbi Abba. The Rashbam explains that Rabbi Abba would agree with what Rava says. Rabbi Abba was addressing a particular situation that he was confronted with, and he said a three can testify for a two. But let it be known, a three can testify even for a one, even though he's closer. So there's no controversy over there. Therefore, there's no need to use the expression, because I rule like Rabbi Abba, as opposed to Rava. What else might be? E midamor bar Rav Ashi. And maybe the use of the expression of Hilchasa, the halachas like Rabbi Abba, is coming to exclude Mor Rav Ashi, who allowed a grandson to testify for his grandfather. I don't need Mor Zutra to use, I don't need him to tell me that we're coming to exclude Mor Rav Ashi's ruling. Less Hilchasa ke Mor Rav Ashi. That's already known, as we saw earlier in the Gemara. E lafuke midishmuel for Rav Sheshes for Rav Papa, and if you'll tell me that we're gonna that Mar Zutra is telling me to rule like Rabbi Abba to the exclusion of these three Rabbanon, they appeared under Rabbi Abba number 4, and we have that written between the lines with a diamond. Ha itosfu, they were already rejected by the source that we saw at the end of Kuf Chof Ches Amud Aleph. So it's true there are numerous Rabbonim that argued with Rabbi Abba along the way, but we don't follow them, and we choose to follow Rabbi Abba. But we knew that they were rejected beforehand. I don't need Mar Zutra to state Hilchasa Karebi Abba to the exclusion of all of these opinions. The Gemara finally answers, Elo lafuke mida Rabbi Yochanan u me'atakafta demor barav ashi. I need this ruling to exclude these two points. Let us take advantage of the double asterisk that you see in the space between the Gemara and the Tosfos, namely to the left-hand side of the text. You see a double asterisk with Kuf Chav Ches Amud Beis written next to it. That means turn to Kuf Chav Ches Amud Beis. Just go back to the previous Amud. And you'll notice there a double asterisk appearing twice on the page with a Kuf Chav Tes Amud Aleph indication next to it. What we're telling you over here is that we're going to rule like Rabbi Abba, as opposed to what Rabbi Yochanan had said in the Gemara there. As you can see, roughly a third of the way from the top, where the double asterisk note appears. There he said, Rabbi Yochanan Amar Eino Ne'eman, that in terms of identifying a Bechor, a father is not believed against the Chazaka. We are going to rule like Rabbi Abba, counter to that, that a father is believed. And the second point we mentioned is that found also on Kuf Chav Ches Amud Beis, at the second point the double asterisk appears, opposite the line featuring Mar Rav Ashi, where he, Mar Rav Ashi, offered an attack on Rabbi Abba's teaching. What Mar Zutra is telling me, let us not take into consideration his attack, but rather stick with what Rabbi Abba taught over there. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.